people. All right, so this is a Young in Recovery workshop, and we've got Brexton and Hannah that's going to come up and share. I think Brex is going to go first, so come on up, Brex.
My name's Brex, and I'm an addict. Hey, all right, so real quick, I want to have a moment of silence so I can allow my higher power into this room. All right, again, my name is Brex, and I'm an addict. Hey, so, to tell y'all a little bit about myself, I got clean whenever I was 21. I'm 24 now. I have 2 years, 8 months, and 22 days clean today. And that is what the program can do, you know, in anybody's life if they apply it. So I'm going to tell you a bit about how I grew up. I grew up with a family of addicts. My father he's used all the way up until I was 17 years old. My mother, she actually used all the way up until 2010, 12, somewhere around there. And she was actually the first person to introduce me to Narcotics Anonymous. And so, not to tell you too much about how I used and how we got here, we all know how we got here. But the big thing is how I knew a way out, you know, and that was through my family. So actually, my grandfather introduced all of us to Narcotics Anonymous. He got clean in 2008, I believe, which introduced my mother and her sister, and then later on introduced my uncle and then my cousins. And so we got a whole family of addicts, but now it's a family of recovering addicts. And man, I needed that so bad for myself, because had it not been for them, my story today would be totally different, you know. It would probably be like most of my friends today. I only have two friends that I used with that are still alive. You know, with the stuff going around today, you know, we don't make it out. Statistics show. And so I believe it's very important for me, you know, to continue on this path that I am today. We talk about finding a purpose and a passion and stuff like that. God's will for us in the 11th step. And I believe that's my purpose today, you know, is to show young addicts that we can do this program. We can live this way alive. The home group I come from is predominantly older folk, and so whenever I came into the program, all I could see was the differences between me and you. Like many addicts, but me, you know, being young, that's all I seen was that I still had that mentality of, well, I'm not like him, you know. But in Narcotics Anonymous, it doesn't matter what age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion. It don't matter what drugs you used. It don't matter if you was shooting up behind a dumpster with rainwater or if you was smoking marijuana in your dorm room, you know. It don't matter where you was at. This program can work for you, and it doesn't have to get to that point if you're an addict. And so whenever I came to my home group, now newcomers group, I was welcomed. I was loved until I could see the similarities between me and everybody else. And that's because of the traditions. They were following traditions, or just started following traditions. For the longest, we was a rogue group, but whenever I came in was, I believe, also an important time for me to come into recovery, you know. Our home group really started following traditions and implementing a proper service structure, you know, everything to be self-supporting and allow other addicts into the atmosphere of recovery that we have today, you know, and it allowed me to feel comfortable whenever I came in, which is very important because, you know, my purpose today is to also build on that atmosphere of recovery. I want to also allow and welcome all young addicts into our home group, and it's by doing what was shown to me, you know, loving on them, practicing the first tradition about unity. I'm a lot of andas, you know what I mean? But in when I step in the rooms, when I'm here at this convention, I'm just an addict. I'm Joe addict, you know. And it was necessary for me to start seeing the similarities and not the differences and all them andas that I was, you know. coming in. It was necessary that it doesn't matter if I was white, young, and all this stuff, man. I was not allowed to be that to myself whenever I stepped in the rooms. You know, I'm just an addict like you are. And that allowed me to receive the benefits of this program whenever I started doing that. And I could continue on with the rest of the steps. Me and a sponsee last night, we actually worked the second step. And, you know, the second step talks about open-mindedness, you know. Talks about trying to see hope and things like that. And he is lighting it up. But, yeah, it talks about being open-minded. And really open-minded to things working in other addicts' lives. And I believe it was necessary for me to see that regardless of our circumstance, we relate with pain, you know. And I needed to see that. I needed to see other addicts who were living this program and the results that are coming from it. But that could also work for me too, you know. And so, yeah, the second step is wherever is whenever I started to become open-minded to that idea. And then the rest of the steps follow, you know. I wanted to share on, me and an addict was talking before the meeting, and she was talking about reservations that a young addict might have. You know, for me, whenever I started looking at my experience, you know, I was still, you know, using drugs every day. I became homeless, thank God. My mother did not enable me. She's also in this program. And if she did, what she did by allowing me to feel my own pain, she didn't deny me my own pain. She allowed me to suffer my own consequences. That allowed me to hit my rock bottom, you know what I mean? And I'm so grateful for that, man. And what's also important, that it wasn't just my mother, it was the fellowship. So way before I got clean, the fellowship in this program was working in my life through my mother, you know. Everybody helped her, because it's a hard thing to ask. It's a hard thing for a mother to say no to a child. You know, I believe it's against their nature. You know, there's a lot of pain behind that, especially for an addict, you know. But she had the fellowship behind her, so I thank the fellowship in NA for my recovery today. You know, I thank them for allowing me to feel the pain of my consequences, which allowed me to come here, you know. Man, I kind of went left field on that. But yeah, an addict was talking about reservations, right? I know when I came into the program, I wondered if I was ever going to have fun again, if I was ever going to be able to go out with friends and things of that nature. But as I stuck around, I came to events like these where we stayed up till 1 a.m. dancing and having a good time, man. And there's plenty of fun in recovery, you know. You know, and I still had that thought, but I still kept coming back until I experienced things like last night. And I have plenty of fun here, you know. I've actually talked to some friends now that I used to hang out with in the past. And I don't know what it is, man. This program and practicing these principles has given me a conscience. You know, I've had a personality change, a perception change. And I don't see myself going back to that, man. There's no fun in it. True fun, you know. I find joy in this program and the benefits that it's given me. Man, how long have I been talking? Probably 10 minutes. Six.
You only got 15 more, buddy.
Yeah, so yesterday we had a workshop about the history of NA, and they talked about how used to, before the traditions, young addicts wasn't accepted into the rooms, you know. And we say a reading every time we have a meeting, and it talks about for the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. When I came into this program, man, I didn't know the struggles that came from our predecessors and the hardships they had to go through. You know, they talked about an ice pick in the eyeball. I don't even know what therapy that was, but they talked about electrotherapy. You know, all them things, and they went through all that so I could be allowed to so easily come in here and be loved into a fellowship that is established today, that works. And so I'm so grateful for that workshop. If you're young and in this workshop, I highly suggest that you attend that, because you know I have a different outlook on what the first time in man's entire history. You know, I have a different outlook on what that means today, and I'm grateful for it. Via why I believe my purpose is to also create a safer place and a more welcoming place for any young addict who might feel different from, you know. Oh, shit.
Doing great.
Tell you what, let's see. Fuck. It's been exactly 15 minutes now. Tell you what, I'm going to hand the floor over to my friend. But first, let me say a couple of things about her. So I went to the VRC. It's up in Murfreesboro, or it was this year. I don't know if that moves around Tennessee. But I attended a workshop because we were supporting a friend who was also there. And, man, she blew it out of the water, man. She gave me hope that I can still live this way of life. And the program that she had, man, it was just so... It was so eye-opening. It was so it gave me strength. You know, it gave me something to keep coming back to. And I really looked up to her. I was actually intimidated by her when I came to ask her to come speak with me, but I knew she would have to carry me on because I'd only share for 15 minutes. So, Hannah.
Podium. Wow. Hi, guys. My name's Hannah. I'm an addict.
Hey.
Hi. I'm going to try to talk loud so I don't get distracted by next door. Oh, yeah, I am short. Is that good? Y'all can hear me? Okay. Thank you, Brexton, for speaking. You did great. Sorry, that's crosstalk, but it's okay. Oh, I shouldn't lean on that. So, when I first got to NA, let me start a timer for myself. When I first got to NA, like, let me say, I did not come here on my own accord, right? I didn't have an epiphany and say, like, oh man, my life's really going in the shitter, like, I need to do something different. No, that's not what happened. So I had forces outside of me that brought me to the rooms. My mother, who's also in recovery, she told me that there was like a better way to live, and like she started bringing me to meetings. And also I had a little like nudge from the judge, you know, after I'd gotten into some legal trouble. So immediately when I came in the rooms, like, I was noticing differences as well. I had heard all these things in meetings people would share about that I hadn't done. And I was like, I do not belong here. Like, why am I here? Little did I know, like, we don't just trip and fall into NA. Like, something bad happened for me to get here. Stuff did not go according to plan. So I like to, whenever I share, I like to say the suggestions I didn't follow the first time around. That's what kept me, like, going out, in and out all the time. So, like, I came around and I heard, get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor. That's a guide through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. It's the heartbeat of the program. However, like, the part that I didn't hear was, like, use that sponsor. So I would be very selective about the things that I would tell her, what's going on. I, like, halfway used my sponsor. And, like, when it comes to this program, you're either in or you're out, you know. And if you're not sure whether you want to be in or out, keep coming back, because I wasn't either. And so another suggestion I heard was to... This is a suggestion I don't think is anywhere in our literature, and I see people do it all the time and somehow stay clean through it. I couldn't. Stay out of a relationship your first year in recovery. And I know, like, when you put the drugs down, like, what's left, you know? Anything else that we can find to, like, fill that void? For me, like, that's what I did. And the halfway house guys in the rooms were looking mighty tasty, let me tell you. So, you know, I found out the hard way why they give that suggestion, because it's really difficult to share honestly in a room full of people when you can point out the people that you've been with in there, because you don't want to step on any toes. And it was a disaster. It was unmanageable, you know. So that was another suggestion I did not follow, because, like, I needed to give myself time to, like, sit with Hannah and, like, get with what's really going on inside of me. Yeah, not fill that void with other things. So, yeah, I was sleeping around the rooms, like, just being unmanageable. And also what I had done was, like, so when I got clean, I had a phone full of contacts of people that I used with, right? And I kept those contacts in the phone the first time. I didn't block and delete. So, like, what's going to stop me one day from, like, when I'm triggered and, like, I don't feel like calling my sponsor, but I feel like calling the dope man? Like, that was easy access for me. So I didn't follow that suggestion. And, like, you know, I had, like, Snapchat and Instagram and all these things full of people that I used with. And, like, if I'm thumbing through my Snapchat story and I see people facing blunts on there and I'm new in recovery, like, that's going to trigger me, obviously. So, yeah, just a lot of things that I kept going in and out every 30, 60, 90 days just because I wasn't taking all of the suggestions. Like, I wasn't. I want to say I was working steps, but I don't think I was putting my all into it, like really getting gut level honest. I was doing it like a schoolwork assignment. I wanted to make an A, right? So I thought that if I just told my sponsor what she wanted to hear, then like she'd be like, "You're the best sponsee ever. Good job." yeah, that wasn't beneficial to me at all. So after I did a little more research, got a little more taste for pain, as if I didn't have enough. I did have enough pain when I came in here. Like, let me say that. It does not matter. This is, like, one of the things I love to say. It does not matter what brings you here as long as you keep coming back. Because, like I said, I did not come here because I wanted to. Everyone around me saw that I had a problem. I had no idea that I had a problem at all, because I was comparing myself to, you know, that addict under the bridge, like shooting up, things that I'd never done. And when I got in the rooms, they were like, "Those are called yets. Like, if you, I haven't done that yet," meaning you're eligible too, "but if I go back out, like, I'm more than eligible to do all those things." And I don't have a doubt that I would. So yeah, I had one bad, well, they were all bad. Like, let me say, it took a weekend. Every time I would relapse, it would take one weekend to destroy my entire life. And there is nothing worse than a head full of recovery and a body full of dope. That is the worst feeling. 0 out of 10, do not recommend. So after that final relapse, I hit a bottom that I said I would never hit, right? I went to jail. Let me say, you don't have to go to jail to be eligible for recovery. Let me say that. But yeah, I went to jail, and I always thought, like, oh, that's for, like, really bad, like, trashy junkies. That's not me. And then I was sitting in a cell with two girls detoxing from meth and heroin, which I'd never seen up close before. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm here with them. I am on the same level playing field. And it was their 20th time getting locked up. They didn't care. They didn't know where they were at. But I was, like, traumatized, right? I was scared. 24 hours just about did me in. Don't ever want to go back. So when I came back, like, I had a little bit of humility, a lot of humility, actually, and realized, like, I'm not exempt. And if I keep going, like, it will continue to get worse. So I was more open to taking suggestions after that terrible, terrible experience. So I got me a sponsor, and I decided to be 100,000% like honest and transparent with her, tell her everything that was going on, not just be selective trying to be the favorite sponsee, because like that was only stunting my growth. So yeah, I told this sponsor everything. I started working some steps, and like I was still, even when I came in the rooms and I had all this evidence, I was still questioning the second time around, like whether I was an addict or not, because I still couldn't get over those differences. The only difference is this time around, I was talking about it. I was saying like, hey, I feel really different. I don't know if I belong here. And people who knew me in early recovery, they saw me struggle through that. They were like, we didn't know if you were gonna stay or not. You really thought you were unique. And apparently that's a common thing with addicts, is we all think we're so unique. Little do I know, like, we're all in the same place, you know. So how unique am I really? Like, did I end up here by mistake? Now I think no. So yeah, I started working the steps, and I heard the word God mentioned in meetings. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, I thought it was like a spiritual, not religious program. And someone told me, if you're having trouble with the word God, think of good orderly direction or gift of desperation, which is what pushed me to change, you know, what showed me that I really do have a problem, that gift of desperation. Because I remember my last high like it was yesterday, like sitting in the jail cell thinking about, like, I just made a phone call and my parents told me they weren't going to come get me out, come bail me out of jail. And I thought for a second, like, I really wanted to die. I saw the phone cord, and I thought that I wanted to choke myself with the phone cord, right? And I don't ever want to forget that. I'm grateful that I didn't, because they probably would have put me in the, you know, the psych unit. I don't know how all that works, whatever it is. The padded room with the jacket and stuff. I'm grateful that I didn't do that, and I'm grateful that I was introduced to this program before I hit that point. So, yeah, I started working the steps, and this time around, like, I cut off all of my old contacts that were associated with using, and I mean all of them. Anyone that I associated with, like, that, or I knew could indirectly get drugs, something like that, I cut them all off. I blocked, I deleted, I had to get rid of Snapchat. I was so sad about that, because what am I going to do without the silly filters, right? But I knew I had too many connections, and I didn't want to risk it, because I didn't want to go back to where I came from. Yeah, so higher power, like, they said we need to build a relationship with a higher power. The only requirements are that it needs to be loving, caring, and greater than yourself. So, not me, because for a long time, I was my own higher power. Like, I thought I was the shit, but I was turning into like a piece of shit instead. So I struggled a lot with forming a connection to a higher power in the beginning. That was something I didn't do the first time around at all. Like, I didn't even attempt to build that relationship. But when I came back, they said just start off by praying. And so I prayed, and like I prayed and I wrote to my higher power. Like, I did all these things to try and communicate, and I was trying so hard to force a connection. Like, I wanted to, I had expectations that the clouds were gonna part and the angels were gonna sing and like lightning was gonna come down and zap me into believing in a higher power. You know, just like that spiritual awakening, the big boom. And it didn't happen that way for me, and it didn't happen that way for a lot of other people I talked to about this. Because I do have to talk about my experiences if I'm struggling. Like, if I sit alone with my own experiences and, like, my own, you know, feelings that I think are shitty, like, they're going to fester and my disease is going to find a way to just be like, oh, well, you should just go back and use since you feel like shit. So, yeah, I prayed for a year. Didn't feel a connection at all, and I was like starting to feel really hopeless. But everyone around me, all my predecessors who've been here before me, they were like, trust the process, keep doing it, it's gonna pay off. And like, how I get through my recovery today, like, I use that faith that my predecessors instilled in me early on from them saying, like, believe that we believe. If you don't believe this is going to work yet, believe that we believe. And I live a lot of my recovery on that same faith today. So I kept praying and kept trying to meditate and trying to lower my expectations of what that's supposed to look like. Because like I said, I wasn't getting the magical moment of belief. Like, it was a very slow and gradual process for me. But what matters is that I kept doing it. That's what matters. Taking suggestions. How about that? Surprisingly, they don't just give you the suggestions for fun. Like, it's for my benefit. And So eventually, over time, I did start to feel like a slight connection. And my higher power was the power of love. Like, it changed throughout my recovery. It was something way different in the beginning compared to what it is now. At first, it was like the group of NA, you know, the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. That can be a higher power. It is definitely loving, caring, and greater than myself. But eventually it turned into the power of love. And like right now, that's where it stayed. And like feeling connected to a higher power, like, ebbs and flows for me. Like, it's not just, oh, I feel super connected all the time. Like, it's very up and down. At times where I'm questioning whether it exists or not, like, just because I don't feel this major connection doesn't mean it's not there. But it took me a while to form that belief. Just persevering through those feelings of uncertainty. So throughout like my questioning whether I was an addict, someone told me something that was really profound. They were like, it doesn't matter. No, they were like, your bottom is where you allow it to be, right? When you put the shovel down. You don't have to end up like that person who was sharing in the meeting, talking about they shot up under a bridge. Like, you don't have to go there. Like, I can look at my own pain and be like, that was enough. That was more than enough. Your bottom is where you allow it to be when you put the shovel down. And another predecessor told me one time, they were like, next time you go to a meeting, look at everyone's butts in the rooms. I'm like, okay, I'm listening. No problem. And they were like, notice how everyone's bottoms are different. No two bottoms are the same. And I was like, whoa, like, that is so true. No two butts are the same. No two bottoms are the same. That was funny. I like that. And there was a couple pamphlets that I really held on to early in my recovery. By Young Addicts, for Young Addicts is a very good pamphlet. And so is Youth in Recovery. I love both of these so much because like they kind of like shattered my illusions of like, oh, an addict looks a certain way. Like, they have to be this bad in order to want recovery. By Young Addicts, for Young Addicts says, we realized that the types of drugs didn't matter. It didn't matter if we only used on weekends or if we used before, during, and after school. We lost control of our drug use and did things we weren't proud of in order to keep using. And I'm like, okay, I can relate. I can relate with that. If nothing else, there we go. And it's just so much stuff like that, that there's so many things that get in the way now of me trying to separate myself, because I stuck around long enough to know that there is a different way, and that those old preconceived notions about what an addict is, like, they're not true. Our disease is rooted in like obsession and compulsion and self-centeredness. It goes deeper than drug use. And I'm still like diving into that. You know, I'm on step 6 right now, and I've been on that for like a year, and it's painful because like all my defects are coming out. And I did get to the point where I was able to be in a relationship after like 2.5-3 years of recovery. And of course, the first relationship I had in recovery, like, I didn't know how it was gonna go, and like, it was a disaster because like, I still had so many defects that come up that I hadn't really worked on yet. So like, that first relationship was a disaster, but I can turn my you know, my perception around and be like, it was a learning process. It doesn't have to be a disaster that was like this awful thing. It was a learning process. And like the power of perception is everything. Like I can turn any situation that I think is super shitty into like, you know, a huge learning experience. And every adversity that I face, I think that's the right word, every challenge that I face or anytime I feel guilty for something that I've done, like that's just another opportunity to love myself through that. Like the universe is calling on me to, like it puts all these things in my path for the purpose of letting me love myself through that. 'Cause like, if I don't learn to love myself, like I'm gonna exhaust the people around me, like expecting so much out of them, trying to get them to love me when I don't love myself. Like it's not gonna work until I try to love myself. And that's a really, really hard pill to swallow for me, for sure. Yeah, I'm just really, really, you know, I like to use space fillers. Like when I first start talking, I'm like, I'm really grateful to be here. But sometimes I don't really like let that sit with my spirit. I just say it because I hear everyone else say it. So I was about to be like, I'm really grateful to be here, which I think I am. But I'm not just going to use a space filler just for the sake of not having silence. I am glad that I was asked to come speak and share a message. Because, like, that's what matters is, like, carrying the message. Like, that's why I'm here is to, you know, share my experience, strength, and hope and let everyone know, like, hope is possible. It does not matter why you're here as long as you keep coming back. Because I stayed here long enough to start to want it for myself. At first, I had back problems. My mom was on my back. The judge was on my back. All the people were on my back to get clean. But eventually, the longer I kept coming back and listening to those predecessors telling me it's going to work if you work it, just keep coming back, it did eventually start changing me in ways that, like, I have no idea how it did. I don't know, like, you know, the magical formula of how it works, but I'm grateful that it did because I'm a lot more proud to be the person I am today than the person I was while I was using. Like, that's a completely different Hannah that I never want to bring out again. And I just want to say, like, my belief is that we're all here for a reason and we all have something to offer. We all bring something to the table. And, like, if no one's told you they love you today, I do. So cheesy, I know. But, like, it's true, you know, because I was told whenever I am sitting in a room and I feel left out and like I don't matter, like that's when I get up and I start hugging people, you know, like go get it, go chase it for myself instead of waiting for people to roll out the red carpet and be like, oh, Hannah's here, because that's what I want. That's what my ego wants. But today I'm glad to have a place to come and know that I'm loved, even if I don't feel it all the time. I don't have to believe my thoughts. That's a choice that I make, and I need to talk about it with someone. You know, if you're hurting today, pull someone aside and tell them, this is what I'm going through, because we're here to help you through this. We love you. And that's all I got. Thanks. Hey.
All right, Mason Attic. We still got some time. Does anybody want to ask any of them two some questions? Or maybe you're also young in recovery and you want to come up here and say something? Yeah, Travis.
How old was you when you got clean?
I was 20. 24.
Huh? Excuse me.
Please repeat what the question was because it can't get on the record.
Okay. So the question was to Hannah from Travis, and it was, how old was you when you got clean?
So I was 20 when I got clean, and I am 24 now. I celebrated my 21st birthday in recovery at my home group.
Yeah. Anybody? Yes?
Well, hi, I came to recovery at 20, and my 21st birthday is coming up in April. So I was wondering, you know, how do you deal with the stigmatization that comes with turning 21 and having associations with people who are closer to your age that are still out in their party phase?
So the question was, how do you deal with the stigmatization of turning 21?
Yeah.
Realizing that
people your age are still in their party
phase. Realizing that people your age are still in their party phase.
So, by the time that I turned 21, like I said, when I came to recovery, I cut off all of my old contacts that I used with. Like, I left them behind, and I formed a whole new group of friends in recovery. So, like, yeah, America thinks it's like a rite of passage to get, like, messed up on your 21st birthday, but, like, just because that's, you know, the stigma doesn't mean that's what I have to do. And so I knew if feelings came up where I felt triggered, like that's why I spent it with my home group, you know, knowing that I had a safe place to go and talk about these things. Because like if I sit alone with it, or if like I do hang out with friends that I used to use with, they're not gonna stop me from drinking or doing whatever I do. Like they're not gonna stop me. So I had to be around people that would stop me, and not give myself that easy access to the people that I used to use with on that day. Yeah, just spend it around people that love you and want the best for you.
Yes. So whenever I started working the steps, you know what I mean? That's whenever I started realizing what, if I picked up what that would do with me and me being an addict and stuff. And so me and Sponsee went over the second step yesterday and talked about picking up destruction, or asking for a fatal and destructive illness or something like that.
Heart attack.
Something like that. Mason's got a great analogy about it, and I ain't going to say it. Putting it through a meat grinder. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's how I look at it today, you know what I mean? I have the disease of addiction, man, and me picking up is not a solution. If anything, I'm picking up destruction today, and I have plenty of experience in that, you know. For an 8-month period, I traded my drug use for just drinking, you know what I mean, because I thought that was all it was, is I had a drug problem, and then I picked up drinking for about 8 months, and man, I got in the most fucking trouble and destroyed my life in them 8 months, you know what I mean? I got a lot of criminal charges and stuff like that, misdemeanor charges. And not only that, I hurt a lot of people doing it too, and could have potentially hurt people and killed them too with the charges that I got. You know, and so, yeah, it's picking up destruction today for me. It's not a solution.
Anybody else? Any more questions? Any comments anybody wants to make?
Stigmatization
again. You can come up.
I'm Haley. I'm
11.
I'm addict. Hey, Haley. I just feel compelled to come talk. I'm nervous. But,
you can come up here.
I got clean when I was 19 because I had a bunch of, I was in a bunch of legal trouble. And one of my reservations was turning 21. Like, what was I going to do? You know, my disease start to convince me that it was okay to drink, even though it wasn't. It wasn't something I really liked to do. But knowing that when I turned 21 it would be legal, and the whole reason I got here was because of legal problems, if I could somehow, like I was scared that my disease would convince me that it was going to be okay. And so I was very concerned about that. So when reservations came up that on my first step, that's what I talked to my sponsor about. She told me to, you know, bring it to the meetings and share about it, you know, get the secret out basically. And so I did, and I shared about it, and that helped. But what's even more powerful than that is that when I did actually turn 21, I had stayed in the program and worked my steps and, you know, really took this seriously, because for me it was a life or death thing. I didn't, you know, run back and forth looking for relationships. I didn't like being in rooms at all. I didn't like the fluorescent lights or talking about our fucking feelings for an hour. I hated all that. And so it was very difficult for me to even come in there, much less be interested in anybody all in a romantic way. But turning 21, it's like, it was so ironic for me, because I had been so scared about it, but then when I turned 21, my higher power already knew, like my life was already planned out, and I didn't know that I would be sitting in prison at 21 for some old charges. So when I turned 21, I was actually sitting in the prison yard learning how to play bid with some old ladies. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is my higher power working for me. I didn't have to go through that experience, you know, out here, as twisted as it is. Like, I was kind of grateful for having been in a safe place. But anyway, I've got 25 years today. It is difficult, but it's possible. I went through my whole 20s, my whole 30s. Now I'm in my 40s. I'm grateful that the predecessors were here to show me how to take this serious. And I'm still looking, you know, at the experience of other people, no matter how much time they have, because, you know, like, I got menopause coming up. What's that like? You know what I mean? Like, I gotta get through that shit. So, you know, luckily there's people in here that have experience with that, you know, and other things about life. So, really grateful for you. Thanks for all sharing.
Thank you.
All right, anybody else? Come on up.
Hi, I'm Hunter. I'm an addict. I came into the rooms about 7.5 months ago, and it was terrifying at first. I looked like a deer in headlights coming into the rooms, and I was coming straight out of a mental hospital. And we were just sharing about this, I think it was Thursday, at my home group. We kind of have like a chairperson's topic meeting. And we started talking about the prison that we had built ourselves in active addiction. The prison of isolation and misery that our using led to with us. And it really put things into perspective, because when I got here out of the mental hospital, I was facing homelessness in Chattanooga, and my mom was in jail for child endangerment. And I got really lucky and blessed to be able to move into a halfway house. Of all women, which is really weird, but I was entirely blessed. But the one thing that really stood out to me the first time that I stepped into a room was someone told me, "Welcome, we need you here," and they followed that up with a hug. Never before had I experienced stepping into somewhere where someone told me I was needed, not for what I offered to them or what they offered to me, but just my presence being there was enough to be needed. And that's something I never experienced. Had I experienced that growing up, who would have said that I would have attempted suicide twice? We can't say. But when you've been alone and everyone's focused on what they can get from you, or you're so focused on what you can get from others, and you hear someone say, "We need you here," and they look you in the eyes and they hug you like you've never been hugged before, it hits different. And drugs never hit the same again. But yeah, that's all I wanted to share. We need y'all here.
All right, so thank you, Brexton. Thank you, Hannah, and everybody that shared. Let's circle up and close this out.
Yay!